Hello, friends. This is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week in this mini summer season, I'm talking to a pastor's wife about how she navigates her role and her ministry while also thriving in her walk with the Lord, her marriage, parenting, and her own unique gifts and passions. Today, my guest is Irene Sun. Irene is a wife and a mom living in the Chicago area, and she joins me today to talk about raising pastor's kids to love Jesus and to love his church. You'll hear us talk about the dual role of being a mom and the pastor's wife on Sunday mornings and all the other times we're parenting while being available to many people in the church. Irene is also a pastor's kid, so she shares some really good stuff about what she experienced as a kid and how her parents handled difficult situations in front of her. One of the main things that will most certainly stick out to you in this conversation is Irene's confidence in the Lord's sovereignty and how that affects her roles as a mom and as a helper to her husband. I know you'll walk away with great perspective, but also really practical tools that will help you moving forward. Guys, you'll want to listen all the way to the end of the show today to hear three things. One, I'm going to tell you who next week's guest will be and what we'll be talking about. Two, I'm going to tell you what next season's podcast theme will be, which is going to start in early September. And three, I'm going to leave you with a final question we'll be discussing over on my Instagram account. I'd love to hear how you would answer the question. But for now, friends, let's get to the conversation. Here is my chat with Irene Sun. I am so happy to have Irene Sun here with me today on the podcast. Welcome, Irene.
Thank you. I'm excited too.
I first met you at the Gospel Coalition conference 2 years ago. We were on a panel together, which was super fun. But what I remember from that was you had great things to say, but I remember especially your laugh.
Yeah.
There it is. You were like the hit of the room. Everyone fell in love with you because you were just like a ray of sunshine, and your laugh was just, you just did it. So I love it. So I'm super glad to get to talk to you again today, because we're talking to pastors' wives about different aspects of ministry. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk today about kids. Right? Mm-hmm. Raising kids in the ministry. So will you tell us, just introduce yourself. Tell us about you, your family, your husband, where y'all are.
So I'm Irene. My parents are from Malaysia, and I was born in Malaysia. And I grew up as pastor's kids. So as I was preparing for this conversation with you, I had to dig up a lot of memories of myself running around at church when everybody else left, because I'm a PA.
I didn't know that about you. This is perfect.
Yeah. So there is hope, you know, at the other side of the tunnel, because I survived being a pastor's kid. But I myself have four children. They're all boys. We lost a child in miscarriage. So, so I like to say that I'm a mother of five. But four boys are with me.
How old are they?
They are 10, 8, 5, and 4 months old.
Yay, so, 4 months old.
Mm-hmm. So I'm back to the nursing and the, you know, can't sit through an entire sermon and needing to go out, you know.
Yes. And that was kind of a gap between five and having a baby. So do you feel like you're relearning a lot of things?
Yes, relearning a lot of things and enjoying it so much more. Good. Because I know that it goes by so fast. Yeah. And very soon they'll be running around just like, you know, he'll be running around just like his brothers. Mm-hmm. So we are here in Chicago, and my husband and I just finished our degrees at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. He finished his PhD in systematic theology, and I just finished my THM in Old Testament.
Wow, I didn't know that either. That's amazing.
During the first, so it took 12 years because we were having kids a few times.
Just a few times.
A few times. And so it took 12 years, but the first 6 of those 12 years, we were in ministry. And my husband was the pastor of an immigrant Chinese church, and he was in charge of the English-speaking congregation.
Okay. And is your husband from the States, or is he from somewhere else?
So he's Chinese by ethnicity, but he was born in Wisconsin.
Okay, so he's not a pastor currently.
We are looking to, we're looking for churches. Yeah, so he submitted a couple of applications all over the country. We're not looking at specific locations. Yeah, so if you know of any Baptist churches that are evangelical and conservative and doctrinally sound, please send them our way.
All right. Well, I wish we had an opening at our church right now, because we are all those things. But this is a great podcast. Anybody listening out there, Irene's husband needs a job. So he wants to be a pastor. He wants to be like a lead pastor.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. A preaching pastor. Yep.
Okay. So you've just had a baby. You have 4 kids. Your husband is he serving in some sort of ministry at the church that you're in?
Yes. So after he resigned to finish his doctoral studies, we stayed in the same church with the blessing of our current senior pastor. And so we just help in whatever capacity that is required. So a lot of the work that he does now involves counseling, occasional preaching. He teaches Sunday school every week. So we're still very much in the life of the church, just mm-hmm. not as the leading pastor.
Mm-hmm. Well, we want to talk about kids today, and I've had a lot of pastors' wives who have sent in questions related to parenting, raising kids in the ministry, raising kids while their dad is the pastor. And I think that's there's a lot of things that are challenging to navigate in ministry, but raising kids is one of those things. It's challenging for me personally. That's mm-hmm. been a lot of questions have arisen about that. And so I can't wait to get your perspective on that today, but I would love to first talk about just the seasons of ministry, because you just said you've been a pastor's wife. Currently you're not one. You will be one again. You have these children, a new baby that you have. And so I'd love for you to talk some about that, the seasons of ministry and how you seek to be used by God when you have children. How do you continue to do ministry, Irene, while you have young children at your feet?
Yeah, I think that the Lord wants us, wants me in particular, to accept his will for my life. And so that is kind of my thesis statement, so to speak, the thing that keeps repeating itself as I'm thinking about this subject. Because I think over the years, I had a very difficult time at first, just accepting the role that the Lord has given to me, because we were serving a very young congregation, and most of the people that we were serving were high schoolers. So
wow, okay.
With a few adults. And so I think that the we were spread quite thin in terms of our ministry, and so there was a lot to do, and there was very little empathy for me as a young mother, because I would be serving a large group of high school girls, but none of them have been parents. And so in terms of nursing and all the sleepless nights, all the other things that are associated with being a mom, I just felt very alone in. So I really resonate with this question. It's like, how do we navigate through the season with young children at my feet, so to speak? And the Lord's been teaching me over the years to accept his will for my life. And what I mean by that is we could either just close our eyes and hope that it's over soon, or we could accept it reluctantly, or as the drudgery, you know, or we can let it be like a bitter, joyless period of waiting for our children to start eating solids. And I think in the beginning, it was very much like that, because I was just feeling very lonely and kind of at a loss. And as the Lord graciously gave us more children, I realized that the children were part of the gifts that God has given to me to serve others. And what I mean by that is, for example, there are limitations. So I cannot, for example, go attend the youth group meetings because I have babies at home. So over the years, I've had to think about, okay, so if I cannot go to them, what can I do to have them come to me? So what eventually happened is I started having very regular sleepovers at my house because that was the only way I could counsel the girls. And so each of them would take turns coming over to my house every week. And I have certain days during the week where it was more of a viable option. So we live in a very tiny apartment. We have 2 bedrooms and 4 boys. And so the boys sleep in the living room, but one room is our studies, my husband's study and our bedroom. And we do have this small study that I use. And so during the week, we would have a girl or 2 girls or 3 girls come over for a sleepover. And after I put all the boys to bed, after I nursed the baby, then we would pray together and talk together. And then they would go to sleep. I would go to sleep. And then the next morning, we would have breakfast together. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the way that we ended up doing a lot of the counseling and discipleship. Mm-hmm. And because we live an hour away from church, so it was really the most fruitful way that I could spend quality time with the people I'm ministering to. Because I think what helps me is to think, okay, what does God's command require of me? God's command require me to take care of my children. And yes, God's command for me is for older women to teach younger women. So those two are the non-negotiable that I am commanded by my king to do. So all the other stuff in terms of like the children's bedtime and whether or not my dishes are done or whether how big is the pile of laundry, those are the things that are negotiable and I need to be flexible with those things. And so how do I navigate life knowing the commands that God has given to me? And do it in a way where I could be cheerful while doing it and I could be of service to others while doing it.
And how was that in relation to your children? Did they enjoy that? Did they look forward to that? Were there ever times where you said, I can't do that tonight because my kids need me tonight? You know, how were they in relation to that?
They love it. So what happened is like the young women would come over to our home right after they work. So usually they would have dinner with us. And so my children loved having company over. And so it became so much part of our routine that we would have dinner and then these young single women would do my dishes or would play with the boys while I do the dishes. And they just become part of our lives, you know, and it became normal for them to see people in our homes. And they actually love having people to draw with and to color with and to do origami with. And so it was a very life-giving thing. And the children loved having guests.
I love that. That's something with church planting. We've been involved in church planting. We had come from an established church where it was very programmed and there's nothing wrong with that. But my children were always separate from me when we were doing ministry, quote unquote, doing ministry. But then with church planting, suddenly we started in our house and my kids are always with me. And at first I found that frustrating because I couldn't focus the way that I had before. But then I realized this is a gift. not just for me, but for the people I'm ministering to and for my children.
Yeah.
This is a blessing for them because they get to interact with these people as well. And they see their parents doing the work of the ministry. They're not separated right. out from right. it. And so it became, even though there are challenges with that, for me, it was hard to focus sometimes. And I felt like I was kind of doing two different roles at the same time. But, and we want to talk about that in a second. But it, in the end, I'm so thankful that they yeah. have been a part of it and a part of everything. Yeah. So I love that you said that as well. But let's talk about that dual role, because yeah. a lot of moms, whether they're in an established church or not, or whether, you know, they're doing what you're doing, which that is so brave of you, by the way, to have a sleepover with people. I don't like sleepovers. I've never liked sleepovers. So I'm not going to be that person that's doing that. But I yeah. love how we can take that, what you said, and think, okay, what is God's will for my life? And where can I kind of incorporate people into the life that I have and how he's arranged my life?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that dual role of, okay, Sunday mornings I'm mom, but I also am how I would say on, I need to be on because people are going to come and ask me questions or they're going to want counsel or they're going to want to talk. But then I have small children
yeah.
who need yeah. me as well. So how do you navigate that?
I think practically speaking, we work on habits throughout the week. So for example, we're constantly reminding our children, do not interrupt when mommy and daddy are having a conversation. And to have those consequences when they do during the week. So that on Sunday, when we're in a conversation, you know, if we are not able to discipline or have a conversation with the child about interruptions right then and there, we know that 6 days during the week, we have been having these conversations. So we can give a shorthand. Oh, remember, we're not supposed to interrupt mommy and daddy. It can be a one-time reminder, and then they would know exactly what we're talking about. And so to establish healthy habits, like being able to pay attention. So for example, we do a lot of long audiobooks throughout the week to train them in order to sit through long meetings on Sundays, because mommy and daddy have to have long counseling sessions sometimes. And it's hard to do the training on Sunday. And so we are stretching attention spans, stretching their ability to sit still for longer periods of time with books, with coloring books, with markers, you know, whatever training we need to do, we should do during the weekday and not be doing it on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so those are some of the practical side to how to do Sundays. But on Sundays, now that I have a nursing infant, I just kind of try to embrace it as if God is sovereign over every single part of my life. If I need to step out of the sermon to nurse my baby, there must be someone in the nursery that I need to be talking to. Mm. And to really just embrace that as God's will for my life. And if there's no one else in the nursery, perhaps the Lord wants me to be praying for someone. Mm. And so that's part of accepting God's will for my life. It's a very, for me anyway, it was a very radical thing for me to learn to not fight against what is happening, to not fight against the circumstances that I feel like is pushing and pressing me away from ministry, but to really embrace all of life as ministry, to really accept all the little interruptions as God's will for my life at this point in time. So if my child is in need of discipline, I have to trust that this is exactly what God wants me to do. So for example, you're saying that I was really brave, and I don't feel very brave, because there was once when we were expecting company, and this was when I had three younger toddlers and no, I had two young toddlers and I was pregnant. And so there was a friend who was coming over, and she was going to bring another friend whom I don't know very well and over for a meal. And I was a little bit nervous because actually she was bringing three people over that I didn't know very well. And I was very nervous because it was okay for my very good friend to come over, but I did not know how things were going to be like when I had strangers in my house while I was pregnant with two little toddlers. And the worst happened. One of my children just broke down during when we had company over. And what ended up happening was my husband had to spend a lot of time talking and counseling this toddler who was melting down in a separate room. And he basically missed the entire meal with my friend and three strangers. And I just felt so awful afterwards. I felt like we have failed, you know, like this was our chance to reach out to these people. And we weren't able to because of a toddler who was melting down. But a few days later, I received an email from one of these strangers who came over to our home. And she said, you know, I saw the way that your husband was talking kindly to your child who was having a hard time that day, and just watching his love for his child who was disobedient, I am convicted to go back to church.
Wow.
And I was just blown away by that, because I hate it when God works like that. I hate it when God works through our weakness. I want to be the parent who is doing well and who has shiny, well-behaved children.
Yeah.
That's not the way God works. And it is even in our weakness, and it actually, it's usually through our weaknesses, through the meltdowns and through the ugly things that happen, that God's will is done in the lives of his people.
Have you ever had a situation at church when you've had to parent meaning discipline, I guess, parent or discipline your child in front of other people? And how have you handled that?
I always take my child to a different room. Mm-hmm. So, which means that conversation that I was having, it needs to stop. Mm-hmm. So, and even in that situation, I have to think, no, this is exactly what God's will is for my life at this point. Maybe God is rescuing me from saying something really stupid. Maybe God is doing something that I don't understand, but I know that my first priority is to discipline this child. And of course, like there's a spectrum, right? Like if it's like an interruption, I can turn and say, mommy's having a conversation right now, can we talk about this later? But then if it's like a full-blown meltdown, then I have to address it then and there.
Yeah.
So there's a spectrum of, you know, whether or not that requires a lot of our discernment and wisdom, whether or not I need to step away. But yes, like it happens, not a lot, but it does happen. And I just have to trust, like, even then, that's exactly what God wants me to do. And so I will try to do it with a cheerful heart.
Yeah. I love how you keep saying that this is God's will for me, because that has been one of the hardest things for me to embrace with having children and already being in ministry and then having children.
Yeah.
It changed the whole scope of what I could do, be involved in. And I was a little resentful of that at first. And there's always been God kind of showing me new ways that I've been resentful of my children rather than seeing them. This is a gift from God. And also the church is a gift from God. And how can I embrace both as gifts from God? Sometimes I can't be and do what I would like to do at church.
Yeah.
Sometimes it means that my children have to wait, as you just said. And so I love how you say that it's helped me to release my expectations of what I want to do and how I think it should go.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is really just kind of going with the flow of the morning or the evening in your home, trusting that God will lead you and he will give you what you need in that moment to know how to respond.
Yes.
So yes. I love that. And that's been,
and the going with the flow is a very active thing. It's not a passive acquiesce. It's an active fight against my own sin, an active fight against my own reluctance, or if I have any bitterness, or if I'm harboring any thoughts of like, oh, I wish that things were different, you know, to really fight against those thoughts and to really radically accept this is God's will for my life. So how do I thrive and obey God in this moment and not wishing it to be any other way?
Can you speak to more of that? Because one of our pastor's wives said, how do you choose a happy heart on, she specifically mentioned Sundays, but how, what are things that you do to actively go with the flow and to keep a happy heart?
So I think preparation is a huge part of it. So for example, if I know that I will be, or both my husband and I will be counseling a married couple, for example, so that means both of us will not be available. So to do works of preparation. So we don't ask our church members to watch our kids very often because of this very reason, because we know that when we do need, really, really need them to watch our children, they know that Hans and Irene don't ask me of this very often, but right now they're asking. So it must be very important to them. And so I save up credits for those moments when I know that both of us will be gone. And so I will ask one of the my young adult single friends. It's like, you know, we will be talking to this couple. Would you be willing to watch the children for 2 hours? And usually there's someone available to help us with that. But if there's not, then there's a lot of work of preparation. For example, the training to sit still for 2 hours, the preparation to bring books with me, to have markers, to have blank sheets of papers, the training for the brothers to not argue when they are together and when they are place in their room without supervision. And so these are things that we need to prepare for, because so often these are places of battles. You know, like we are constantly battling against the principalities of darkness. And in order for me and Hans to have the freedom to serve and to encourage and to edify the church, we need to be able to focus. And so that's not a wrong desire, but throughout the week, we need to be prepared for battle. We can't just go into battle with our swords dull and our shields unpolished. You know, everything needs to be prepared for that Sunday. And so I think our current provision from God to be able to homeschool is a huge part of how we prepare for Sunday, because I am with the kids all day long. And so I am able to give them audiobooks that are longer, mm-hmm. so that they are able to sit still and play with things without arguing and without with their minds on something else. So preparation is a big part of how I keep a happy heart on Sunday. And sometimes those preparation don't go the way that I plan, you know? And so, and in those cases, then I have to trust, okay, the Lord does not want me to serve in this way this Sunday. So I need to be able to address my children with a happy heart. And so, and be flexible when things don't go the way we had planned.
Mm-hmm. Or when a child misbehaves and it's a public misbehavior, and sometimes that can send me a little bit in a tailspin, but
yeah,
just be knowing that that's going to happen and not expecting that my children are going to be perfect because people are looking at us.
Yeah.
Has been one for me as well. Okay. So I didn't know you're a pastor's kid before, but I want to ask you a question about that. I always, when I meet a pastor's kid, I always want to know, what are some things that your parents did that were really helpful in helping you embrace your own faith and to love the local church.
I think loving the local church was a hard one because even when they try to not talk about ministry in front of the children, it's just part of the air we breathe, you know? And so I'm able to see which person hurt my dad or who made my mom cry. You know, those are the kinds of things that children see even when parents try very hard to hide things. And I remember instances where my parents would just, you know, hold our hands and say, let's pray, pray really hard. And there would be like this tension in the air. And so I think loving the local church was a very, was a struggle for me, to be honest. And when I started to consider marriage with Hans, he was a lawyer. So when we got married, the thing that we talked about during our honeymoon was whether or not we were going to serve in the local church. And it was a very hard, I mean, I loved our honeymoon, but our conversations were very serious because it was just full of me confronting my fears and my unloving attitude towards the local church because I really, really did not want to be a pastor's wife. And so it was a lot of learning, a lot of breaking that the Lord had to do. And finally, because I said in my wedding vow that I would follow him if he were to follow Christ beyond this life, I knew that he was called to be a pastor. And I had promised to follow him. And he had promised to follow Christ. And so I had to trust Christ because Christ was leading my husband into ministry. And the first 5 years, I have to admit, it was very hard. And I kept thinking this was something that's going to pass. Yeah. So when I say passive acquiesce, drudgery, you know, when I use these words, I'm not judging other people. These were feelings and struggles that I experienced myself. And I was just waiting for everything to be over. And so it took me 5 years to finally start loving the local church, to finally start loving the people whom we were ministering to. Of course, like I wouldn't say that I didn't love them the first 5 years, but I think I finally felt a genuine love and joy after 5 years.
We can all relate to what you just said. Even though I knew, even before I met my husband, I felt called to ministry. There's just something about it that when you get into the reality of it, and you knew the reality going in, see, I didn't know.
Yeah.
But when you get into the reality of it, it's a challenge to say yes to God, not the first time, but the ongoing yes of, I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to choose a happy heart. I'm going to continue to do what you've asked me to do and not fight this and fight what it means. So are there things that you've done with your own kids that because you've learned as a PK?
Yeah.
What are things you're doing with your kids to help them love Jesus and love the local church?
I just realized that I didn't answer your first question, which is what my parents did. I think what my parents did was is what I'm trying to do. So I will try to answer both questions right now, which is to be willing to give up our lives for the sake of others. And I saw that very well demonstrated in my parents. Like, our dining table was not our own, our home was not our own, and they genuinely loved people, and they were willing to go wherever the Lord called them. They embodied Isaiah's prayer, send me, I will go. And they went. I mean, they were ministering to God's people in Indonesia. They were ministering to God's people in Tahiti. And they took all of us with them. So, and they did it with so much rejoicing. There was a lot of sorrow, because I mentioned tears and hurt, and betrayal, but within our home, it was a very happy home. And even during the very dark times when my mother had cancer, and even during the very difficult seasons, my parents did not complain very much, and they rejoiced in God's calling for their lives, and they poured themselves out for God's people, and they submitted to God's will, even when it was not what they wanted to happen. And so that's what I think I want to model for my children, and that is Isaiah's prayer, send me, I will go, because we see the greatness of Christ's sacrifice in our behalf, because we see our wickedness and the greatness of the debt that we owe and the price that Christ paid, that we are willing to go wherever he sends us.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever had to walk your kids through what you just described with your dad being hurt? Have you ever had to do that for your kids?
No, I have not.
So yeah. They haven't experienced any people speaking to them about their dad or criticism, overhearing criticism or anything?
Yeah, not yet.
That's great.
I know. I've experienced it myself, though. Like, I've experienced people criticizing my dad to me. Or they would try to verify information. You know, it's like, oh, so your dad gave this sermon illustration on Sunday. Do you guys really pray at night at home? You know, and so I remember just being very hurt when they did that. And I think, and this is where my mom did a very wonderful job at helping us process these things, because what my mom does is, so my dad never defends himself, but my mom is always the one defending my dad. And she's also the first one to admit he's a fallen creature and not a perfect man. But she's also the one who demonstrated for me that she continues to submit and respect and love my dad, even knowing fully well that he's an imperfect human being. And so my mom's very active and radical submission to my dad, even under those circumstances, really pushed me to continue to honor and love my dad, even when the difficult criticisms came.
When you said she defended him, you mean to you guys, to you and your siblings, or would she vocally speak to other people about him?
Oh, to me and my sisters. Yeah. Yeah. I perhaps she did to other people, but I doubt it, because that's just not what she does. Yeah. But I think for them, it's like, well, people will talk, you know? And they just accepted that as part of the sorrows in ministry. But in terms of, they wanted me and my sisters to know why they do the things that they do. So my mom would be the one who would explain to us why dad did such and such. Mm-hmm. And my dad is usually not the person who says, yes, I'm right. And that's just not my dad's style either. So that was very helpful, like to have my mom as the voice of wisdom in these kind of situations.
Do your parents, they live in the States now, or do they live in Malaysia?
They lived in Malaysia until a couple years ago, and they decided in their 60s to take on a new pastorate.
Wow.
They are now serving a church in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah.
But very far from y'all.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of it is they decided it was time for the Malaysian churches to train up and raise up new leaders. Yeah. And so, and in our culture, as long as the older man and older woman are there, it's hard for the younger people to take ownership of the new roles as leaders. And so they decided to physically remove themselves from Malaysia in order to have the churches in Malaysia prosper. So that's the kind of pastor's home I grew up with. You know, like they're just, they think very little of themselves, and they want to follow Christ wherever Christ is calling them to go, and they're willing to pour themselves out for the sake of the gospel.
Well, I want to ask you a question related to them living far away, because we have several wives who have written and saying that they live very far from their families and their children are growing up far from their grandparents. Mm-hmm. And so that's been something that has grieved them, not only the pastor's wife, but the children. And so could you speak to that about how do you navigate that living far from family, and how do you help your children not feel any self-pity, or how do you help them through the grief of that?
I think a very robust understanding of eternity helps immensely in this case, because growing up, I had a struggle with FOMO, this fear of missing out.
We didn't call it that then, right?
Yeah, we didn't call it that. But there's all kinds of fears related to missing out, because, you know, like we're poor as pastor's kids. Like we each had one dress growing up, and that would be the dress that we would wear on Sunday, every Sunday. And there are just a lot of sacrifices to be made, and to be far away from grandparents is one of the many sacrifices that my parents made. And nowadays I hear my husband talking about eternity with my boys all the time. You know, it's like, well, it's bedtime, you know, and if my boys still want to play with cars, you know, my husband would say, well, there's all eternity for us to play with cars. You know, like when That's we get to heaven, answer.
Yeah,
we can build our own cars and build highways for us to have real races, you know. And so very robust, tangible view of eternity is very helpful in the case of FOMO, because as Christians, we must believe that the Lord will be the one who fulfill all of our purposes in this life. And this life is not it. Mm-hmm. This is not real world. This is not Narnia. Mm-hmm. And we have to believe that there's more to life than the here and the now. And that goes for grandparents, you know, like we will be spending all of eternity with them. And we have the privilege of having grandparents who are following the Lord. And I think I have a friend whose parents are not in the Lord, and I think that's a much harder thing to navigate. There are greater sorrows in those kinds of situations, and perhaps in those cases, because it is God's command for us to honor our parents, perhaps it is important for us then to find a job that is closer to the grandparents, in hopes that perhaps our nearness would bring them to salvation. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Irene, just one last question. Do you have any final words of advice about raising kids in the ministry that you haven't yet shared with us?
I think my last words would just be a deep and abiding trust that God's will for us is joy. And joy to the very fullest. And whatever task that he's given us to do right now, this is exactly what he wants us to do. And we're not missing out on anything good, because his will for us is good and perfect. And we do not know our own future. And here I'm preaching to my own heart, because as we are sending out these resumes, I'm very nervous about where the Lord is going to be sending us. But just trust that He is the one who fulfills His purposes in our lives, and that He is trustworthy, and that He's good, and that His steadfast love and His faithfulness endures forever. And so we can rest in that, and we can say, send us, Lord, we will go, because His love is more, and His love for our children is more than we could ever ask for or even begin to imagine.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking with you. I wish we were sitting face to face instead of computer to computer. But I appreciate so much your time and your wisdom, and thank you.
Thank you.
So far in this mini summer season of By Faith, you have heard me share my anchors for ministry. We've listened as Kiersey Dates talked about the role of the pastor's wife. We've learned from the honesty and truth-telling of Alicia and D.A. Horton on marriage and the ministry. We've heard from Katie Orr on friendship for the pastor's wife. And now Irene has given us lots to think about. But there are probably so many more questions you want answered. Well, next week, I've asked my husband Kyle to join me for an Ask Me Anything episode. We'll be tackling all your ministry-related questions, or as many as we can fit into an episode. If you'd like to submit a question, simply look for the link in the show notes and leave it there for us, and make plans to join us next week to hear how we will answer your questions. Next week, we'll wrap up this mini-season on Ministry by Faith, but starting in September, I'll be releasing weekly podcasts focused on the ins and outs of, drumroll please, friendship. I can't wait to share these conversations with you. They're going to be so helpful to you, as they have been to me as I've had them. Subscribe now so you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes on friendship. But before you finish this season, I would love for you to head over to my Instagram page, at ChristineHoover98. Have you ever wondered what that 98 is for? It's the year I graduated from college. Head over there and answer this episode's closing question. What are some resources that you have found helpful in ministry? I'd love to hear what's been helpful to you, and I know others will want to know that as well. Friends, thanks for listening to By Faith. Join me next week as I answer your questions. Until then, have a great day and keep walking forward by faith.